When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. I want to open this week's listener mail segment with a very special welcome to my neighbor's downstairs dog, who you may be able to hear in the background, who is going through some things. Be kind to your pets. Be responsible dog owners. And if your dog is really going through something, check on it. That's our takeaway from today. We don't need to pay. We don't need to play the Sarah McLachlan song, but you all know the one I'm talking about.
In the arms
and
of
so
the
today
angel.
We're going Sorry. To.
Hey, look! I'm doing it. I'm speaking up for the dog owners. When I leave my house, my dog does that. So I have a feeling your neighbor left.
I know. Yeah, and you have to, you know, I'm big on empathy. You have to have the human moment. So hoping the dog is okay. And thanking you, fellow conspiracy realists, for tuning in. Today, we're going to talk about issue near and dear to my heart, the U.S.'s ongoing beef with The Hague. Also, another thing I think near and dear to all of us, speculation about food supply apocalypse. You may be able to see a deep dive of that on YouTube in the near future. And then we're going to talk about a conspiracy native to Amazon and TikTok. But maybe first, maybe, you know, we don't always open up with a voicemail. Matt, what do you think about that? Want to switch things up a little today?
Yes, Ben, let's jump to the phone lines. This is a message we received from Durs.
Hey, guys, it's Durs here, and you can use this on the air if you so choose. In your latest episode of Strange News, you touched on the food supply scare in lieu of Russia's war with Ukraine. And I wanted to add something to that conversation, but it's not going to be the doom and gloom that it first appears, but it's hanging there. In that episode, and forgive me if I'm incorrect, I didn't hear you mention anything about rock phosphate. And, you know, how rock phosphate is mostly supplied by Russia and Ukraine, so we're not getting that anymore. But before this war, scientists already thought that we were going to hit peak phosphorus by 2030. So what? Like, does that mean we just can't have food anymore? Because we can't mine this fertilizer out of the ground? I don't think that we actually need to. What do you guys know about permaculture? It's a system of agriculture that combines philosophy with smart farming. Google it. Using permaculture, farmers have reversed desertification of entire forests. We mine fertilizer to like exploit a shortcut to a system that already existed before humans started interacting with it. I make my own fertilizer in my yard with weeds. That's Korean natural farming, which is a little bit different. But anyway, permaculture at a mass scale, proven to work. It's the easiest, simplest, and most cohesive way to farm. So tell me, is permaculture the stuff that they don't want you to know? Thanks so much for your show, guys. You guys actually cover the apocalypse in a really blessedly funny way. And I appreciate listening to you every day. Thanks.
Uh-huh. What a nice thing to say.
That's so nice. Thank you so much, Durs. And Matt, you... I'm familiar with permaculture, actually from some of my outdoors time. You spoke with Durs, and Durs actually wrote to us, I believe.
Yes, permaculture is interesting. I don't know much about it. I'm learning about it now, and I figure we would all learn about it together. I did speak to Durs. He's my new best friend. Sorry, guys. Y'all are out. Durs is in. That's just how it is. No, I'm kidding. He's just a very, very cool guy. Spoke to him a little bit. He's got a company that specializes in permaculture out there in Seattle, in the Seattle area, I guess. It's titled The Hermetic Order of the Garden Dawn. Oh,
wow.
Snap.
I love a good pun. Love it. Great job, Durs. Also, permaculture, as I'm sure Durs pointed out, while the term itself is from the 1970s, it's descended from some really, really old agricultural and husbandry practices.
Yeah, it's a lot of different things. Permaculture is many things. It is mostly, as you said, indigenous people's practices, right? That kind of got lost over time as industrialization came around. And now it's kind of, we're going back to those roots, if you will. It's a fascinating thing. I'll just tell you some of the things here. By the way, his company is, quote, a secret society of plant lovers. It's pretty awesome. We talked about so many things. One of the most interesting concepts that Durs talked about is that people in general, our society, I guess, we see weeds that are on our lawns as problems, weeds that are in our backyards as problems. I certainly do. I'm preparing to sell my home, and one of the first things I did to try and beautify this place to be able to make it marketable is to get rid of all the weeds, every single one of them. Scorched earth, only grass will remain, and that's what I decided to do. And there are so many companies out there that will do that for you. There are so many products that you can do that on your own. And Durs' main point, or one of his main points, was that we should not do that. That's one of the worst things you can do for the soil if you want to actually have healthy plants growing on that soil. One of the worst things you can do is especially apply herbicide and kill all those things. Anyway, As Durs said, it's way more of a philosophy and a collection of techniques than anything else, right? That's what permaculture is, philosophy plus technique. I don't know where to begin here, guys, besides this peak phosphorus thing, which is a real existential threat for me, even though it was kind of a theory for a while that we had to throw a little cold water on in the past. But at the same time, it's a real issue, at least when it comes to how much it will cost to continue, you know, getting these fertilizers, the rock phosphates out of the ground and then shipping them around the planet in order to continue our industrial farming practices. It is a bit scary to me. Have you guys heard anything about that recently?
Yeah, I know. I mean, Durs, you are correct in the way that the global phosphate rock system has been disrupted by conflicts. I would also note to your earlier point, Matt, because we did discuss this, I think, briefly a number of years ago, saying that things are, well, like when you said we threw some cold water on it, which is to a degree true. We by no means said it wasn't going to be a problem. There are a lot of things that I think sometimes people don't take as seriously because they hear really hyperbolic descriptions of them. But just because some one source is being alarmist does not in any way mean that the problem is not there. It's like the question about the timing of when peak oil will be reached. It's a very similar problem with peak phosphate. I think primarily because no one really knows, like we know where the we know where you can mine phosphate rock in a cost-effective way now. We know that there are certain areas that have great reserves of phosphorus, but we don't know exactly when we will see those affordable reserves exhausted. Is it going to be 50 to 100 years? Is it going to, is peak phosphorus going to be 20, 30? Is it going to be several hundreds of years? The jury's out. And there are a lot of smart people who disagree on this.
To me, it reminds me of the rare earth elements or the rare earth materials episode that we did.
Thanks to everyone who wrote it.
Yeah. There's a ton of this stuff, rock phosphate and mineable phosphate on the planet that we could access. It's just, it's concentrated in a few specific places where it's economically feasible to mine it there. But otherwise, it's just spread out in ways that it would be difficult to make a lot of money or to have it even just a profitable company at all to just gather up the phosphate in these, you know, various places across the globe. So it could be a really big problem headed our way. I guess the next thing we need to do is kind of define what is permaculture a little better, at least for my mind. Ben, you mentioned the 1970s is when the term at least came around by a few Australian guys, Bill Mollison, David Holmgren, and they wrote a book. It's called Permaculture One. That was really the thing that kicked off the movement of permaculture, I suppose.
Yeah. And you raised a great point where in some of the conversations you and I have had in the past and what you just said now about your conversation with Durs, that there is a culture, a philosophy behind this. The idea, I think maybe for people who aren't familiar with the term, we could go to something you had linked to from NC State with their appendix on permaculture design. I think their introduction is quite succinct and covers a lot of the bases, especially like the three driving ethics or axioms of the belief.
Oh, yeah. That's a perfect place to start, Ben. I'll give you this quote that comes from that book as a basic definition of sorts, and then we'll go into those ethics. The definition is, quote, "Consciously designed landscapes which mimic the patterns and relationships found in nature while yielding an abundance of food, fiber, and energy for provision of local needs." So basically, your local area, using what's there and designing the thing out of what's already there, like just making the land essentially work. It's in a way, it seems as though we kind of want the land to work for us. We want this land to make the corn. We want this land over here to make the wheat. And that's all it is. That's all it's going to be. That's what we're going to do.
Right.
And this philosophy, it's way more like, well, what naturally grows over here? What's edible that grows in this land already? Let's design it around that.
So the former idea you outlined is mono agriculture, right? Those are the things where you, those are the practices where you see an entire swath of land growing only soybeans or growing only, you know, one specific type of profitable crop. In profitable in whatever current regime you live in. But for much of human history, this wasn't the case. People lived closer to the land and they were practicing the thing you described, the latter idea, which I think is superior. If you are in the United States, you might be familiar with the concept of the three sisters, which is the corn, beans, and squash. You plant them, like you plant the beans at the base of the corn stalks, and they help support the bean vines as they grow and reach the sunlight. The idea is you can, by farming, you can look at it as not like as helping plants work together and people working with plants, you can also rotate the crops you grow in such a way that enriches the soil rather than growing just one crop that over time could deplete the soil. So there's science to this. What we're establishing is there is philosophy, there are ethical guidelines, but there is, like, and I'm sure Durs, you have probably had to point this out to people in the past. There's solid science to back up a lot of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude. There's all kinds of science and fascinating things I've never heard about. Did you guys know there's a German method where you cut your lawn that has grass on it and you cut it into squares? Then you take that lawn and you flip it over so the grass side is down.
Oh, cool.
And then you leave that there, and then that grass breaks down into the nutrients you need to feed stuff that you plant into the soil on top of that. I've never heard of that.
That's news to me. That's news to me as well, Matt. I love learning new things. That's awesome. That reminds me of when Scott Benjamin over at Car Stuff years ago, you know, Scott, I love the guy. He told me I was doing a piece on two cycle engines, right? So I was fixing all these little lawnmowers and I was getting frustrated. And he was like, you know what you should do, Ben? You should buy a goat. To cut your lawn. And that's a real thing people do. You can rent goats to cut your lawn. And arguably it's more sustainable than a gas guzzling motor. But I love, like, Matt, do we know how old that idea is in Germany or how recent?
I don't know. I'm here somewhere in one of these links that I shared, guys. It's a specific technique. Oh, Lord, I'm not going to be able to find it right now. I missed a step, by the way. You have to get decaying wood or like dry or older wood that's just around somewhere from, you know, probably just sticks falling down and things like that. But you have to put that wood between the ground and that grass layer that you put on top, because that wood breaks down the same way the grass breaks down, and that will feed those plants that you put on top of it for years, I guess, or at least for a long time. According to Durs, I don't know these things, guys. Durs is very smart and knows these things. there's also something I figured you guys might have encountered through ridiculous history. You guys ever heard of night soil?
Oh, yeah, night soil. Human poop is fertilizer.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it's sort of like gray water, maybe, where you take the runoff or the, you know, parts of the water that you use in your house that don't have human fecal matter in them and use it for irrigation.
Yeah, night soil is an historic practice too. It's quite an efficient one, but I think what a lot of people might not know is night soil is still commonly used as fertilizer today in different parts of the world.
That's right. That is right. Again, just mix your poop with wood chips and you've got some really great fertilizer. That's
you do that anyway. That's what I wipe with.
Oh, Lord.
There are controversies, though, about it being linked to some health concerns, you know. But it makes sense when you're, you know, like, imagine you're a farmer. I will just say, for the sake of argument, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, and you don't have a big company. You don't also have a general store where you buy fertilizer. So you're saving up the poop. And then you're probably also having a lot of kids, because that's free labor, right? It was a very different time.
All right. Guys, I'm going to get to those ethics. We never said them yet. This is according to NC State, North Carolina State University, I'm assuming. And this is on one of their websites. It's Appendix G, Permaculture Design. It's from the North Carolina Extension Gardener Handbook. Okay, here we go. Permaculture Ethic 1, Care for the Earth. Stop me when feel like this is sounding like the Guidestones. Care for the Earth. The discipline looks to nature as a model for design. Permaculture includes replicating and restoring natural systems. With this ethic, permaculture emphasizes organic and sustainable methods of working with the land. It promotes the use of naturally occurring and locally available materials for design, installation, and maintenance.
Awesome. And number two would be care for people. One primary goal of permaculture is to provide for people's basic needs, including food, shelter, human connection, education, and a sense of purpose and place. a permaculture designer, aims to produce both food and pleasure.
Whoa.
Okay. Okay. Number three, share in the surplus. The third ethic is to share the surplus once basic needs are met. In alignment with natural systems, excess yield is transferred to another system or person. Waste becomes an asset to be repurposed. Matt, I know you were kind of joking, but there are some Guidestones-y feels about some of these, like in that it feels more like a philosophy more than like a set of instructions for a, you know, sort of practical functioning system.
But that's, I don't think you were joking, Matt. I mean, I know the precepts, we all do, but you, like, Matt, you were just literally saying earlier that this is a combination of philosophy and practical, practical tactics, right?
Yeah, it really is. And it does, honestly, it really, I'm not joking. Well, it feels like the Guidestones to me, like leaving room for nature, finding a way to work with nature, basically. Here is my thing, guys. This sounds amazing. This sounds like, also, and I'm serious, Durs, this feels like the laying the groundwork for a cult, you know, like, and not in a bad way. I'm not saying permaculture is a cult. I'm saying these are very positive, awesome things. It just does make me feel like you could use this as your like support structure to get a bunch of people out living on a piece of land with you.
Yeah,
you
know? Communes, Zindic farms kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't spell permaculture without cult. Just putting that out there.
But that's not what, I don't mean that at all. I'm not trying to speak badly about the philosophy or the movement. It's just when I'm reading that out loud and I'm hearing it then and putting it all into my head.
Yeah.
Because you could use that phrase, permaculture designer aims to produce both food and pleasure.
Well, you know, the BuzzFeed headline is libertarians hate this agricultural system. Then, you know, for some people who are a little bit sensitive about stuff, the idea of the third ethic may seem probably too close to socialism in some ways. I mean, the big difference from permaculture, between permaculture and the precepts from the Georgia Guidestones is obviously not the demand for a mass lowering of the population, and hopefully not descended as directly from belief in eugenics. But also in defense, and again, this is not, this is a point that has nothing to do with perspectives on current society. What sticks out to me here is the emphasis on systems, right? On systems. And society is a system. A group of people is at heart a system. And in the natural world, way before human beings ever existed, that third precept and that first precept were enforced at times brutally. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nature's been a lot of things, but it's not always the nicest thing. I don't know. I think this is, especially the emphasis on learning and mimicking natural systems. Like the more sophisticated so much technology becomes, the closer and closer it cleaves to being very similar to pre-existing things that were formed by environments or by evolution. I strongly believe that. It doesn't matter if I believe it, it's true.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing for me, guys, is this all sounds well and good. It sounds amazing. It sounds like the right thing to do. One of the things Durs said was no one picks up leaves in a forest and the soil's doing great in there. And that's one of the whole points. Like the way these systems function is to sustain themselves, right? The way a forest functions, the way a meadow functions, it will sustain itself if you don't touch it, and it's going to grow and be great. It just won't do maybe the things that we want it to do, but you can gently shift those things and those systems to work for you rather than tearing them up and trying to build something new, basically. Mm-hmm. I really loved what the philosophy he was teaching me. The way Durs did this is he went to a special place. I can't remember, Durs, what it was, but he just looked it up online, found a school basically to go to and learn all about permaculture. And then he started a business and he's, you know, he's running a successful business right now, doing this stuff. My question is, how do you do this on a mass scale? Really? Because it feels like it's going to be impossible just to fill up the stores with the food that Americans and much of the Western society is used to. Right. I don't know that you can. Maybe you can. It feels unfeasible to me, which, you know, maybe it's not. And hopefully somebody out there knows that it's not and knows a way to do it. Mm-hmm. And we can figure that out, because this does seem a lot more sustainable than the factory farming. It's just, I don't know how it would function at scale anytime soon.
Oh, I would love to talk about this more in depth, Matt. I say we do an episode, because I've got some old, like,
okay,
crazy stuff about this. So, Darius, you're going to have to tune in for that. I think this will be a fun one.
Sweet. I'm in. Well, that's it for now. Thanks so much for calling in, Darius. And we'll be right back with more messages from you.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
And we're back with one more message from you. And in this case, you is A. Connor. And here's how the message goes. Hello, I am an American and have lived in Europe for 30 years now and teach at a community college here in the Netherlands. I really enjoy both stuff they don't want you to know and stuff you should know. A few months ago, I gave my English as a second language students the exercise of choosing one of your episodes, listening to it, and giving a short oral report on the episode in English. Oh. Of course. I would love to hear that.
Oh, shucks. Thanks.
A. Connor goes on. I also teach social studies and international studies. So for those courses, every year our students visit the International Court of Justice in The Hague, where we talk about how it works and sometimes get to watch some of the war crimes trials. Most people do not know that the U.S. does not participate in the court. They do help find and transport criminals, and historically they did help create the court. However, they do not participate in it. It would be great if you did a show on the International Court of Justice, especially given the recent debate on U.S. democracy. Love to hear you guys. Keep up the good work. Kind regards, A. Connor. Ben, that was a very telling chuckle, I think, because why would the U.S. not want to support an international court that tries war criminals?
It's even crazier than that. Okay, so a lot of Americans don't know this, but there are some people who are lauded as heroes by certain factions of the U.S. Population that can't travel to places because they might get arrested. And yeah, your point holds, Noel, about the idea of possibly being war criminals. I would like to introduce everyone who hasn't heard about this. First off, I'm excited. I'm jumping around. But first off, A. Connor, thank you. Yes, done. We're doing that episode. It's weird that we haven't done it yet.
So much. It's so rife. It's fascinating.
Because here's how deep it goes. And A. Connor, I'm sure you know this, but for anybody who's not aware, this stance against participating in ICC is so ingrained in American culture that back in 2002, under the Bush administration, they passed the American Service Members Protection Act. And that has a street name. The street name is the Hague Invasion Act, meaning that if you take someone that we care about, because the U.S. doesn't treat everybody equally, obviously, if you take someone that we care about and you try them in the court, then we are sending the world's biggest, most dangerous military to the court. And not to peacefully testify, not to be character witnesses.
So there's a really, really cool piece. Cool. I don't know. It's just a good like primer on this that came out in April 16th of this year on NPR. It was filed by Michael Martin on All Things Considered. And he interviews John Bellinger III, who is a former legal advisor for the National Security Council, specifically about this kind of fraught relationship between the U.S. and the International Criminal Court. And the host starts the interview very, I don't know, straightforwardly asking this gentleman, why? Why is it that he sort of gives a little background. So the International Criminal Court was established relatively recently in 1998 by an international agreement that's called the Rome Statute. And the U.S., you know, to A. Connor's point in the email, did help negotiate that accord. In the end, it didn't formally join. And he asks Bellinger, why not? And he responds, the real answer to your question is that the U.S. has been concerned from the very beginning that the prosecutor for the court would be given too much power unchecked, and he or she could conduct politically motivated prosecutions of U.S. soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A.K.A. Bring them up on war crime charges, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's more to the story, too.
Well, certainly. But I'm just saying it's like we don't do war crimes in the United States. I think that's sort of the what I'm saying is I am the U.S. We don't do war crimes. That's what other countries do, war crimes. We don't do that. So therefore, we are not going to put our rubber stamp on a situation out of our control that could call our men and women in uniform before some sort of European tribunal and rake them across the coals for just doing Uncle Sam's good work.
That's the idea. I mean, that's why there's standing law in the U.S. I'll dig into this and have the specifics for the episode. But that's why there's standing law in the U.S. that says, you know, you can't prosecute certain people or positions for exercising the actions that are expected in their role, unless they're, you know, there are things that are outlined, right? But that's why the U.S. doesn't accuse a sitting president of war crimes, right? When there's a conflict in a region somewhere else in the world. But this idea, it's important to note, has never been tested. The U.S. has not invaded the Hague for two decades and counting. So picture the UN or the International Criminal Court with one of those little erase boards in the break room that says it's been, and then somebody in marker wrote 20 years since the U.S. invaded the Hague. It's strange. There's some CYA there, obviously, and a lot of U.S. allies didn't like this move. And the U.S. started instituting this strategy of obtaining immunity from other state actors in order to, like, in a quid pro quo. So it's a fascinating process, but it's not something every country can do. And the U.S. would say, of course, as the lawyer pointed out, they're not signatories to the ICC.
Well, you know who else is not? There's another country that's in the news right now that's doing some things that doesn't recognize.
Russia.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's honestly where this this article kind of stemmed from, or this this NPR piece was, you know, the U.S. Or the president of the United States, Joe Biden, went so far as to call Vladimir Putin a war criminal. And where do war criminals get prosecuted? It's at The Hague, at least in terms of international affairs or the international, you know, community. And yet we would not hold our own officials or soldiers to that same standard. So at that point, you know, I mean, I know it's complicated, and I know it's definitely, we're going to keep this short because we don't want to spoil anything that's going to go into the episode and definitely requires a deeper dive. But it feels very hollow for Biden to say that as sort of a buzzy thing to say, to I'm taking a stand, and yet we don't actually recognize the jurisdiction of this, you know, largely internationally legally recognized body. So it's kind of like not really putting your money where your mouth is when you say a thing like that.
Yeah. Also, let me just read the list of countries who are not part of the International Criminal Court. This isn't a full list, but Russia is not. Neither is the U.S. We've established that. Neither is China, nor India, nor Iraq, Libya, Yemen, Qatar, Israel, Ukraine. Like, it's not everybody is what we're saying. And then I do want to say, I know we do want to keep this short, but I want to say there could be rational / legitimate concerns from the perspective of those countries. The ICC gets a lot of criticism. It's been accused of being a tool of Western imperialist or neocolonial powers, punishing like the leaders of smaller, less powerful states in Africa in particular, while ignoring crimes committed by other more powerful countries. It's like even the African Union wants to withdraw from, or made moves to withdraw from the court. It's hard to find a court that every country agrees with. And there are a lot of accusations about conspiracy. So A. Connor, as the Templar Knight said to Indy, you have chosen wisely. This is perfect for an episode. And there's an Indiana Jones coming out, number 5. I don't know if you guys heard about that.
Don't. Yeah, he's melted my face off. Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the last one was so middling.
Harrison Ford will be in this one. I don't know about Shia LaBeouf, but
if he can still stand upright by that. I mean, no shame there. Harrison's a stud. Hopefully there won't be any like CGI monkey swinging. I couldn't handle that. It took all the magic out of the previous films.
The Indiana Jones franchise also, as far as I know, like Russia, India, China, and the U.S. and those other countries, does not acknowledge the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court. So it's going to be up to the good folks at Rotten Tomatoes to decide whether or not Indiana Jones 5 is a crime.
Well, good luck to you, Indiana Jones. Really, I mean, honestly, battle there.
You could argue Indiana Jones himself might have been guilty of some war crimes. I mean, yes. He just shot that guy dead. He was just swinging a sword around. I mean, come on, that's not right.
He also,
you're talking about the airplane guy?
Yeah.
There was a dude who's swinging a scimitar around and making a big show of it. And then Indy just shoots him dead, you know?
And that was improvised.
He also shot that alien. He shot that alien, man, in Star Wars. Mm. He definitely shot first. And that's revisionist history right there. Han shot first. Just
dude, and he ruined that fridge.
Well, he also stole a ton of priceless artifacts. Look, I say this as a fan of many films in the Indiana Jones franchise, but the guy's a criminal. He's a criminal in the international.
Not a great deal. Oh,
you guys know what else is coming out? It's this weekend. It's the new Thor movie.
Yeah, it's out. That looks good. Tonight.
That looks good.
As we record.
Oh. Love and Thunder. That looks fun. Christian Bale's villain character looks dope. He looks like Skeletor.
Tomorrow.
It's very Masters of the Universe looking. I like that vibe that I'm getting from the trailer.
Can't wait, guys. I don't get excited about many movies.
How do we go from international criminal courts to Thor? I love just that movie. About the show.
Crime and jurisdiction. Yeah, this is a great thing. We got there because I just had to reference the Templar Knight from The Last Crusade. So that's how we got there. But I think this is something more people should know about. And the decision for the U.S. to participate or not participate in the ICC is such a
Who does it ride with? Who does that rest with, Ben?
Well, it's such a high level decision. I think it's executive branch, but it's such a high level decision. I may be wrong that the average voter doesn't get to do anything about it. Doesn't matter what you think. You can call your local rep, I guess.
All I will say to end with, if that's okay, is this guy Bellinger, you know, who seems to know what he's talking about. He says the U.S. should be a member, but sadly, that ship sailed back in 1998 when the negotiators over U.S. objections during the Clinton administration negotiated a treaty that did not address U.S. concerns. So, yes, it's painful for me as an American, as a lawyer, as the former legal advisor for the State Department representing a country that has long been at the forefront of international criminal justice. It is unfortunate that the United States is not a party to the International Criminal Court. We should be. But for the time being, I think U.S. policy will have to continue to be, through both Republican and Democratic administrations, is to support the court when it is doing what it was set up to do, which in this case is the investigations of the Russian war crimes and crimes against humanity in Ukraine, which is exactly what the court was set up to do. So, boy, oh boy, this is a deep dive of an episode that we're going to have coming up in the near future. And thank you, A. Connor, for this, just kind of light bulb moment, I think, for all of us. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with one more piece of listener mail from you.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
And we've returned. This one comes to us via Instagram. A lot of people reach out to me on Instagram or Twitter, various missives, Crossroads at Midnight, all the hits, all the good ones. And this person requested to be anonymous, and they hipped me to something that I shared with you all off air. It was somewhat strange to me because it's something I had never heard of. A lot of times we get a good idea, we're thinking, why haven't we done an episode on that? Like the ICC, I think it's crazy that they never came up in conversation. Or maybe it did back in the YouTube days. But this question, I'll read the pertinent bits. I had to remove some stuff to help preserve this person's identity. But if you are listening, thank you. This is a very strange one. And just like academic journals, the piece we did earlier, which, by the way, we got some we're going to get some feedback from the world of academia on that one. But like academic journals, this idea is a little bit niche. So here it is. Anonymous from Instagram reaches out at Ben Bolin to say a TikTok trend called the hashtag read and return challenge instructs readers to read books on Amazon quickly, then return them. Amazon gladly does so, then deducts the money from those authors. This has led to an increasing number of authors and observers wondering whether Amazon is complicit in this trend, pushing authors to join their Kindle Unlimited program. Now, earlier, and this anonymous person did something I love, which is sending some sources, sending some articles that they had been reading and relaying some of their own personal experience. At the end of this week's segment, we're going to ask if you have encountered something like this. It reminds me of earlier this week when we're talking about how to manufacture a viral marketing trend. What if you could pull those levers, not just to try to make a middling film a success, but you could pull those levers to incentivize behavior in people? Here's the scoop. So Amazon has this thing called Kindle Unlimited. Full disclosure, I've used Kindle Unlimited for a number of years, often to get books related to various branches of research, things that are so subject specific, I'm probably not going to keep them, you know, as a physical copy. But the story really started with someone named Lisa Kessler, who is an award-winning, very prolific author, has written 44 novels, 44 separate novels. And then earlier in June of this year, blew up with a tweet where she said, hey, just a reminder, Amazon is not a library. When you read and return a book, it costs the author. It's June 1st, says this again, successful, award-winning, prolific author. And I owe Amazon at the moment because people are reading through a series of books she wrote and returning the books when they finish. So Kessler was in an interview with BuzzFeed, and she said this problem started around May of this year. And last month, per her, there was this swell of returns of entire series of books, and they didn't seem to be related to people not liking the actual book or accidentally buying something, which, you know, can happen when you're shopping online. She says they ran through them and turned them back in and got their money back. You know, this is a hustle people have done at retail stores in the past, right? Like, nobody has to admit it if you've done it. But I'm sure there are many of us listening in the audience today who maybe bought something that they were going to use over the weekend and then returned it because you just needed it for the weekend.
And also the permissiveness or laxness of return policies.
it comes off like a feature where it's like, oh, I'm not taking any risk by buying this thing because I can just return it, no questions asked. But there are so many ways to game that, like a scam you'll see in movies sometimes is like people will steal something from one target and return it to the other one because you don't actually have to have the receipt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And in some cases, especially for a lot of big retailers, the headache of the paperwork and returning and processing something is, or like denying a return, it just doesn't make sense for their use of time. That's why there are so many algorithms in place, right? Like if you order something that's not incredibly expensive from a company like Amazon, you know, and you just get your whatever threshold to get free shipping, and then you say the box never arrived, if you're not doing that really often, they'll probably just send you another box of the same stuff. You know? Totally.
I think the term is called spoilage, like in business in general. Like or there's a shrinkage, certain, maybe? You know, yeah, maybe it's one of the two. But there is a certain allowable level of that. Like, right. I think we had even talked about like in, you know, this isn't the same, but in like drug cartels, they have a allowable amount of cash that just gets eaten by rats, you know, mm-hmm. That's like, okay. It's like, it's just like a little spoilage. Mm-hmm.
Look, we're past it now, but I have to say it.
Say it.
Nobody talks about shrinkage. Seinfeld? Anyone? No? Okay.
Yeah, I know, for sure.
So this is not a Seinfeld problem, though, because a lot of these authors are independent, you know? They don't mm-hmm. have the Seinfeld comedians and cars getting coffee money. Instead, what they're doing is depending upon these sales, and when these things are purchased as ebooks, they ideally you would get paid off that. You get like royalties of some sort. But when that ebook is returned, the royalties from that sale get deducted from the author's Amazon account directly. And per Kessler, there's also a digital delivery fee that Amazon charges the author. Sounds kind of BS to me. That's like the Ticketmaster fees. Yeah. But they don't.
I mean,
get
they'd argue it's
feedback.
For maintenance of servers or
oh,
something.
Sure.
They'd yeah. argue it. Yeah, it's something.
So, our cynicism is showing here.
Well, but Ben, you have to imagine they probably also are getting Spotify money compared to what they would get for like a purchased physical copy of their book.
Right, and here's where the conspiracy comes into play. The running theory is that Amazon is aware of what's being called a hack. Like you can buy an ebook and you get 7 days. You have to return. You can return it in 7 days, no questions asked. And you could even hear people. You'll hear plenty of people arguing that ebooks are a scam. But that's a story for another day. The conspiracy, if you'll let me Pepe Lopez just a little bit, guys. The conspiracy is that Amazon is aware of this trend and complicit in it. And they're allowing it to happen because they want to incentivize or push these independent authors toward the Kindle Unlimited program. And the Kindle Unlimited program doesn't have the same return policy. So it's like, Kindle Unlimited is Amazon's ebook subscription plan, and that pays authors by the pages read instead of just buying, you know, the entire work or something. So if you go to Kindle Unlimited, you read 10 pages and you decide, well, Muammar Gaddafi's Guide to Permaculture is not for me. He's just coming from a different place. Then you will, whomever owns the rights to that book would get the 10 pages. So,
you know what I would buy?
What would you buy, Matt?
A little book from Lisa Kessler titled Pirate's Passion.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's real passionate. You can tell.
By the cover, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the conspiracy theory that's going around. That's the idea. That's the speculation. Looking into it, there are some questions that I would have to ask. We have to interrogate that theory because, one, is Amazon not powerful enough that they could just say all books have to go to Kindle Unlimited? Maybe maybe they aren't. Maybe they can't get the literary whales like the Malcolm Gladwells, the Stephen Kings, the J.K. Rowlings or what have you. But then it feels a little circuitous, right? Like there are two ways to look at it. So there are a couple ways. So Amazon could, the far end, the deep end of the conspiracy theory pool is that Amazon did this somehow, right? They did it. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, hey, you have to go to this, this model that we have, they did it on purpose, even though it feels kind of roundabout. The other more moderated or mitigated idea is that maybe Amazon saw it happening and thought, well, this works out for us. We're opportunists. Eventually, these people who are not powerful enough to change our return policies are going to have to do what ultimately makes them some money, even if it makes them less money than the previous model did. Both of
that
them
would suck if that was true.
Yeah.
We've seen them doing shady stuff like this with like designers too, for example, where like they have this Amazon marketplace where you can like upload a design and then through Amazon, they'll print on demand like a shirt or a coffee mug or whatever, sort of like, you know, sites like TeePublic, but it's all within the Amazon ecosystem. And it turns out that a lot of like freelance designers were having their like designs stolen and then put into the Amazon, you know, whatever the automated system and then printed and they get no money. So we know that Amazon doesn't particularly have scruples about this kind of thing in terms of, because I mean, think about it. Like if you're not John Grisham or whatever, sorry, that's the only like big author, or Stephen King, you know, you're an independent seller. You depend on those ebook sales, not only for a little cash, but to get your name out there because it's like the distribution platform of choice. Let's not forget Amazon started off selling only books, you know, and they've still kind of kept an iron-fisted grasp over that market. So they really have like small creators over a barrel. And mm-hmm. What are you going to do? Say, well, I'm not going to put my stuff on Amazon anymore. Okay, cool. Go with God, they say, right?
Right. It's kind of like the old adage from back in the days of the West, when the U.S. was expanding westward. You probably heard this story 100 times, but the idea is you go to a small town, there's just one saloon, there's a guy playing poker, and the dealer is clearly cheating. And one guy points out to the poker player, he's like, hey, this game is rigged. And the poker player shrugs and says, I know, but it's the only game in town. Like that's kind of how these monopolies can work. And that is a very real danger. But it also launched a pretty nuanced discussion that you can read in. You can read excerpts in the Daily Dot and Chicago Tribune picked this up and so on, about the nature of ownership, what differentiates a bookstore from a library, you know, whether you should be able to return a book just because you say you didn't dig it. And this all leads us to what's happening now. As we record now, there is a petition going around on change.org pushing for Amazon to change its return policies for completed ebooks. You can find this very easily. And their idea is in the petition, they explicitly say, we don't have a problem if somebody reads 10 to 20% of a book and they don't like it. You can turn it back in, return it because you didn't like it. It's like taking a bite of something at a restaurant and sending it back. But then if you mm-hmm. read the whole thing and return it, it's like you're in a restaurant, you ate the fries, you ate the hamburger, you know, you're polishing off the cookie or whatever. And then you tell the server you were not satisfied. The meal wasn't up to your standards and you want your money back. You know what I mean? Ew. I'm sure a lot of our fellow conspiracy realists in the service industry are like nodding with their brows furrowed right now. Yeah. You've seen those people.
I've seen it.
Oh, you got war stories?
It's probably one of the worst things. It's just one of the worst things. I've been on both sides. I've been at a table when somebody did it, and I've been, you know, walking out as the server to pick up a plate, and they're like, yeah, that was awful. I'm not paying for that.
You just realized it was awful. Classy. Anyway, but if you agree with the following two ideas, that one, change.org petitions work, and that two, Amazon should change its policies, then I encourage you to find this petition. and give it your John Hancock and see if that will trigger a response from Amazon. And with that, we're gonna leave it there. Thanks to A. Connor. Thanks to Anonymous on Instagram. Thanks, of course, to Durs. Thanks to everyone who tunes into the show every day, every week, every episode, every segment. And thanks even more so to those of us who take the time to contact us. We love it. We want to hear your thoughts. I'd like to end with a very special thank you to the amazing work of independent authors in the U.S. and abroad across the planet, because it's a daunting task, but I think it's an important pursuit. I think it's an important profession. We can't wait to hear what you think, folks, about permaculture, about the ICC, about the big A, Amazon nowadays. So let us know what's on your mind. We try to be easy to find online.
Oh, yes. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we're at Conspiracy Stuff Show. But there's more.
That's right. We are also authors, at least officially, especially Ben. Like, really. You can buy our book. It's coming out right now. You can pre-order it. It's called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's got our names on it. You'll see it. There's a picture of, I believe it's the Capitol guys. Is that correct? Capitol and a UFO. You'll recognize it as soon as you see it. It's got this cool orange warm tone to it. Check it out. Please don't return it on Kindle. Like, if you can help it. Unless you just really don't like it. We get it. Sure. But still don't return it. That'd be cool. All right. We also have a voicemail system. If you want to call, you can. Our number is
1-833-STDWYTK. You'll call, you'll get a message letting you know you're in the right place. You'll have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes aren't ours, they're yours. Go nuts, get weird with it. Highly encourage you to do so. Give yourself a cool nickname. Tell us what's on your mind. Tell us, second most importantly, if you are comfortable having your name and or message on the air. Most importantly, do not censor yourself. If you have ancillary links you would like to send us, if you want to walk us to the front of the rabbit hole, we'll do the rest. All you have to do is drop us a good old-fashioned email where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.